Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
First of all, my name is Paul Hitchcock, and I am a colleague of Harry Barth. Very excited to have both these gentlemen here this episode. Very important topic. Mark Taylor is a master chair for Vistage out of New York City. Harry Barth is the founder and senior managing partner of Barth Calderon Asset Protection, Estate Planning, and Business Planning firm located in California, clients across the country. And we got together, Mark and I, and Mark, I'm going to have you chat here in a minute, but always thinking about adding value to, Mark, your network, your members, people you're dealing with. I know you're doing a lot with Vistage, have many groups want to hear about, and you have your thumb on the pulse of a lot of issues that are impacting the people you work with. And this is one of them, the Corporate Transparency Act. It's a really big deal. And Harry's going to talk about another layer specifically that is involved with New York residents. And so we are recording this, and we'll get the recording out to everybody that has expressed interest in this to sign up. So keep an eye open for your email. I also want to say that if you have specific questions about your own situation, on anything that comes up here, I have put an email address in the chat there on the screen, and email, reach out about the Corporate Transparency Act. Happy to get you one-on-one with Harry and the team for input on your own situation. As you hear what Harry has to say, things may pop up in your mind. Also, Mark, we'd like to put your contact information in the chat. If you do that, as we get going here, I highly suggest you get connected to Mark. He's doing a lot of great things. And you can also get one-on-one with Mark to learn more about what he's doing, if you have that interest. So with that, Mark, if you could just kind of tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing.
Well, I'm a master chair for Vistage and run one of the largest practices in the country, in the world. I have about 100 members here in New York City. And we meet for the purpose of becoming better leaders, running better businesses. And the reason why I wanted Harry here today is that one of the biggest challenges as a CEO is you got a lot of things going on, and it's what we don't know that we don't know that can really, bite us. And so I didn't know anything about this corporate transparency law. When you first told me about it, I said, I want to get my members knowledgeable about it. So, Harry, maybe you can give us a brief overview and tell us how this could affect New York City, in particular, CEOs of small businesses.
Well, Mark, thanks. A couple things. First, it's going to affect not just New York City. It's going to affect 35 million small businesses across the country. This is a very big deal. And we're going to talk about every aspect of it today. I think that your members and our attendees are going to walk away with a very good understanding of what this is all about and why it came about. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to tail off and start talking about it a little bit. So let's understand why. What is this all about? Well, for years, going back to 9/11, sadly in New York, you're too familiar with, there was always a governmental interest in cutting off financing for terrorism, money laundering, and tax evasion. And they've tried on many different occasions to, and then we had the Pandora Papers and others where the people were using various entities to hide behind those entities and engage in nefarious activities. Now, over the years, we've had, as you could see, when you do a notary, you got to give your driver's license and banking. So, for example, one of your members or one of my clients wants to get a loan, or even open up a brokerage account. It's know your client, you know, who are you, you know, let me see your passport. Let me see. We want to know who you are, who we're doing business with. But yet, throughout the whole country, there are millions and millions and millions of entities that the government doesn't know who the owners are, who's in control. And the concern is that, or whether it's viable or not, the concern is that they don't know. So they passed a law back in, I think it was 2021, bipartisan law, that inherently was to pull back the curtains. Now, this listing or this registry of businesses is not a public registry. So for asset protection purposes and estate planning purposes, many times, for example, we'll use a Wyoming or Delaware limited liability companies. And in Delaware limited liability companies, the ownership, the members and the managers are non-disclosed. That remains the same. We still don't want people with pitchforks and torches showing up on all of your members' front lawns saying who they are. But the government wants to build a registry of who is the true owner of these businesses. So understand that. That's very important. Who is the true owner? So you have layers, and we'll talk about how that works. This particular legislation is not designed for large companies. It's designed for small entities. It's targeted for small. If you're a large company, you're exempt. You don't even have to report. And I'll take you through some of the exemptions in a moment. So it's designed who owns that LLC that has that brokerage account and that piece of real estate in it. We want to know who it is. We want to know who they are. We want to put them into our registry of knowing what they call it in their terms, the beneficial owners are. But it's a lot more complex than that. So we start with the fact that, and New York has its own version. New York will have its own version, which will be in tandem. Why it's needed, I don't know, because it's already going to, it's a federal requirement. New York is adding an additional requirement, which seems to be redundant. But New York will be effective December 2024, and it only applies to LLCs. So you may form a new LLC in New York. The beneficial ownership of who owns that will need to be part of the New York registration. And also for pre-existing entities in New York that are LLCs prior to 2024, there's also going to be a required disclosure of who they are. Now, given that to understand a little bit, there's a court case floating around. So this law went into effect January 1st, 2024. So blast off, we're there. And just so everybody knows, there is at least one significant court case in the federal court system looking to, that may have some legs, declare the Corporate Transparency Act unconstitutional. But until that happens, which may or may not happen, it may not happen for several years, all the way up to the Supreme Court, we have no choice but to comply. Now, who's running all this? Well, the thing is called FinCEN. All right. Now, FinCEN is a division of the Treasury Department, and it's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. These are the same people that deal with offshore bank accounts. All right. So if Mark, you got a bank account in Switzerland, you got $20,000 in it, you got to file a report, what's called a FinCEN report, letting the government know, hey, I got $20,000 in a bank in Switzerland. And if you don't, that's a criminal penalty, as well as a civil penalties. And the same thing applies with the Corporate Transparency Act. And I'll talk about the penalties as we get further into it. So the first thing that I think that's important to understand, there's also another bill that's been passed by the House, not yet passed by the Senate and not yet signed by Biden, that basically extends some of the deadlines that I'm going to talk about today as they stand right now. So let's talk a little bit about who has to report. Yeah. Start by saying every entity that's filed with the state needs to report in the whole country. Start with that, then we'll look at the exemptions. All right. So everyone, so you got an LLC, you got some real estate in it, you have a business, you have a medical practice, you have a legal practice, you know, your spouse has a limited partnership, you have a small, you have an S corporation. All of them are reporting entities unless there's an exemption that says you don't have to report. So let's start with the exemptions. So start with everybody's got to report. I have like 15 entities personally for asset protection and estate planning purposes, because that's what we do as a law firm, asset protection, estate planning across the country. Almost all of those 15 are reporting entities. So we start with the entity. Is it a reporting entity? So let's start who's not. So one of the big ones that will affect many Vistage members and many people is the large company exemption. So the large company exemption is if these are ands. All right. So if you have 20 employees, all right, full-time employees, all right, defined by federal law what a full-time employee is, and you have your off and your business is based in the United States, and you have $5 million of gross sales or over, you are exempt from filing that organization under the Corporate Transparency Act. That covers a lot of Vistage guys and girls a little bit, you know, for their company. Now, in many of those companies, they also have subsidiaries, your subsidiary A, B, C, and D. If those subsidiaries are wholly owned subsidiaries of the superseding exempt entity, they don't have to file either. All right. So if you got, you know, company A, you know, makes widgets, it's got 25 employees, that's $6 million gross sales, it's housed in New York City, all right, and it's got three subsidiaries that are wholly owned by the widget company, that's not a reporting entity. Banks are not reporting entities. Securities firms that are regulated by the SEC and FINRA are not reporting entities. Public accounting firms that are regulated by Sarbanes-Oxley are not reporting entities. Tax-exempt organizations are not reporting entities. Insurance producers and insurance companies are not reporting entities. And the list goes on. Investment advisors. These are all firms that were regulated to death anyway. So everybody knows who they are. Everybody's fingerprinted. So there's no need to do that. Venture capital fund advisors, big deal in New York, are not, they're already regulated, are not reporting entities. Financial service companies, large public firms are not reporting entities. As I said earlier, tax-exempt entities, governmental authorities are not. So first you got to decide, are you a reporting entity or you're not a reporting entity? The vast majority, however, you know, I have 10 employees, I'm an S corporation in New York, it's a reporting entity, unless it falls within one of those exemptions. Now, the inactive business exemptions, a lot of people have companies that don't do anything. I see it all the time when I'm doing reviews for clients. Oh, I have these three companies. They're really not doing anything. I just keep them. All right. Those are all become reporting entities. So it gives us an opportunity to decide whether we want to dissolve those entities or not dissolve those entities. So that's who has to report. Now, when must we report? So let's talk about that. So for all entities, limited partnerships, corporations, LLCs, LLPs, if you have to go to the state to get the authority to form a business, it is a reporting entity unless it's one of the exemptions. Meaning a trust, which is the most trusts, which are not filed with the state, irrevocable trust, living revocable trust, the trust themselves are non-reporting entities. So a trust isn't. So if you have, you know, your living revocable trust in New York that we put together for you, and inside that trust is your house, that's not a reporting entity. But that changes if that trust owns an LLC. Now the trust is the owner of the LLC and becomes a reporting, what we call a beneficial owner. So first, is it a reporting entity? All right. The responsibility for reporting is at the entity level. All right. So once we have a reporting entity, then we're going to go look inside and see what we have to do. So let's put a line in the sand. For new entities formed after January 1st, 2024, up until a couple of weeks ago, the moment that entity became alive in the state, whether it be Delaware, New York, Connecticut, I don't care where the heck it is, the moment it became alive, you know, so you filed it, all right, and now it's alive, you had 30 days to file that entity as a reporting entity in the FinCEN network. And what did we have to report? The name of the company and all DBAs, the actual address of the company, not the lawyer's office, the CPA's office, the actual address of the company, and the federal tax ID number, the address of the place where they're located, and the federal tax ID number. That is the reporting entity's information that has to go to FinCEN. Now, it's important to note that some entities, like single member LLCs, people are using or have used their own social security numbers because they're disregarded entities for tax purposes. That will have to change. Even for those entities, we will need to go to the IRS and get a taxpayer identification number, even though it's a disregarded entity, so we can comply with that governmental requirement of CTA. That's brand new. So if you, Mark, we form a Taylor Associates LLC, a single member LLC, and it's tax disregarded, you were using your social security number, well, that's not going to fly anymore. It's a reporting entity. We'd need to get an ID number to report the entity. Now, in addition to reporting this, so now once the entity is a reporting entity, we got that entity, it's reporting. Taylor and Associates LLC is a reporting entity. We've determined no exemption for it, which is, by the way, the vast majority of the smaller businesses in America. Then we have a few more things that now begin to happen. So under January, the January 1st, 2024, we had used to have 30 days. Now we have 90 days from the date the company, that was just recently changed a few weeks ago. They gave us 90 days to comply, all right, with this part. So 90 days from the time it became active, not only do we report the entity, but the paralegal or the person that filed the paperwork with the state to form the entity needs to report that they are the filer for that entity. And then the lawyer, okay, that if there was a lawyer involved, the lawyer that supervised that paralegal also must report for that entity. So now we have the company applicant, the paralegal, the supervising lawyer reporting, and the company itself. Then all owners that own over 25% interest in the company, right? So if you own 50%, I own 50% of company of the LLC, Mark, that we put together, we are now beneficial owners and we must report. Now, what must the beneficial owner report? So Mark, you have to give them your name, full name. If it's Mark, Mark Michael Taylor, you can't use Mark M. Taylor, Mark Allen. It's Mark Allen Taylor. All right. And where you live. Not a post office box, not a UPS box, none of that, not in my office, not your CPA's office, your home address. And you must give them a color PDF of your driver's license that's not expired and or a passport. That must go for every beneficial owner of the company greater than 25% or greater. So in our scenario that we just talked about, this Harry and Mark are reporting that information to FinCEN. Now, not to jump around a little bit, there's a little bit of an optional ramp that we can take, and that is we can pre-qualify ourselves. So Mark goes to, we go to FinCEN, and we pre-qualify ourselves saying, hi, I'm Mark Allen Taylor. Here's my information, and here is my driver's license. I want to apply for a FinCEN number. And they will give, it's called the FinCEN identifier. They will give you a number. I just got my number the other day. They give you a number. It's like a social security number. So for all filings for the future, wherever Mark Taylor is involved, you just have to put Mark Taylor, FinCEN number, so and so. We don't have to give them the driver's license every time. So if you're reporting to a bank or something, just give them your number. They don't necessarily need to have all that other information. It's just that's in the government registry that is not public. So you can use a FinCEN. You don't have to. You can give them the information each time, or you can get a number. But then we go further. All right. So many times what happens is that each of those, so it's not, so now we're reporting who is a beneficial owner. So in our case, it was Mark and Hera. But in our business, we decided that in our LLC, Mark, that Paul Hitchcock was going to be the manager of the LLC. Could have been Mark and Harry, could have been Mark, could have been Harry, but we had Paul. Whoever controls the entity, whether they're an owner or not, is a reporting person as a beneficial owner. So Paul now we need to submit the company applicant, the supervising attorney, Mark, Harry, and now Paul. All right. So now that has to go in that filing to get our one entity certified through CTA. Now, Mark and Harry have been working together for years. I'm an estate planning attorney. So we are having your LLC interest held by yours and your spouse's trust, all right? And my LLC interest held by my wife, our living revocable trust, because that's good. We don't want to go to probate. We don't wind up in surrogate court. So we put it in there. So now the beneficial owner is not Mark or Harry. We, the trust, is the owner. So now who are the trustees of the trust? They become reporting entities. Now, if there's a third-party trustee, they're a reporting entity. If we have a scenario where we have a trust protector that can remove and replace trustees, that trust protector is a beneficial owner and reporting entity. If some third party holds what we call a power of appointment to remove and replace assets with inside the trust or to change the direction of assets inside the trust, they are a reporter as well. And if our company, God forbid, is owned by a company that owns our interest, then all of them become reporting entities. So this can become, as you see, quite a complex scenario for reporting. Now, therefore, who's going to do all this? All right. So the interesting characteristic is that the AICPA, the CPA Association, has indicated to their members the CPAs should not be doing this because they consider it to be the unauthorized practice of law. Because determining who beneficial owners are, exceptions, how they're held in trust, how they're held by superior level companies is really legal. And I think you would want the protection of attorney-client privilege as well while you're going through that. It may be held by a trust that you inherited years ago, and we don't even know who the trust protector is anymore. They're alive or dead, and there are no exceptions. We need to get a determination of whoever, and we need to get all that information from people saying, oh, you'd want my address, and you want my driver's license. I don't even know who you are. You know, so it becomes quite complex, but we have 90 days from the time that that entity became alive to get all in. And remember what they're driving at. They want to know ultimately, if it just says, you know, Taylor Family Trust, it doesn't say anything. They want to know who's behind Taylor Family, who is ultimately behind everything that needs to go into the register. The whole purpose of the exercise, we got to keep drilling down, drilling down, drilling down. If we do not meet that 90-day threshold, we are subject to penalties. We are subject to a $500 a day fine for every day we are out of compliance and up to 2 years of imprisonment and a maximum of fine of $10,000. So they're not fooling around to get that done. So and that, by the way, used to be 30 days. And now at least we have that 90 from the time it became alive. However, Mark, if our driver's license changes, if we move to a different place, if you move to a different place in the city, everything has to be updated in the FinCEN. Your identifier needs to be updated. Your information needs to be updated. And we have, under the current law, 30 days to do so. The bill that's passed the House, that's not yet signed in the Senate or by the president, would extend the changes and modifications to 90 days. And also, if there's an inaccuracy or we discover an inaccuracy, we have 90 days to correct it in FinCEN. So you have the legal analysis portion, and then you have the actual filing. It's kind of like a tax return. In other words, you have all the tax planning that goes into effect, and then you actually file it with the government. So first part, you and your lawyers are working together and determining, is it a filing entity, who the beneficial owners are, how many layers we have to go. We may have to look at the trust. We may have to look at a certificate of good standing of the company. And this is for each company that we own, and then each trust that it sits within. So sometimes it's real simple. You know, it's just a simple S corporation, Harry and Mark, it's not in our trust, boom, 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 we're done. All right. You know, who runs the president? If you're on the board, okay, of a company, and that board has the ability to change the officers, then every board member needs to. but every board member should have a FinCEN identifying number. So their information is filed with FinCEN. And I think that's important to understand. And then we also need to go into, in our new entities now, as well as old entities, the operating agreements, the shareholders agreements, things of that nature. And language needs to be put in there that says that the members of this LLC, the shareholders of this corporation, will comply with the requirements of the Corporate Transparency Act, or they are not allowed to be a member or a shareholder. That has to be, because ultimately the company could be fined and not be able to meet its requirements because one person holds out, well, I don't want to give you my driver's license and my home address. Ugh. So they said, okay, that's fine. Like under a buy-sell agreement, you're now out of the company, because we can't have a company fall into disrepair. There needs to be some enforcement that happens in there. So this is new companies, all right? One of the issues that we face is, as a protection attorneys, we know that appropriate trusts and LLCs and entities are very critical in protecting people's assets from the claims of third-party creditors. So there are usually numerous entities that are involved. Now you're going to have the other side of it. I have all these entities, and all of them require CTA. So people are going to say, well, maybe I don't need as many because it's a pain in the ass to comply, and I don't want to comply with all of those. So that's going to hurt the asset protection. So we're just going to have to buckle down and understand that this doesn't change the need for the entities in the first place. It's a filing requirement. Now, once the entity is filed and we have an approval on the entity, there's nothing else that needs to be done absent changes. All right. So if somebody dies, all right, and then their shares move into probate or in trust administration, when those shares ultimately arrive at the next generation, that next generation person, your son, for example, would become a reporting party. Minors who own interest in companies are exempt. They don't have to report.
Harry, Mark had a question he was going to bring up there. Mark, you want to address that, because you just touched on it, Harry?
I mean, really, you were going towards existing corporations. We talked about.
Oh, I'm going to get to the existing ones in a moment.
Yeah,
that's even more fun. But I wanted, yeah. But the new ones are. The new ones have a shorter fuse. The new ones, I form a new entity for you today. Mark and Harry form Mark and Harry LLC, and it becomes active in New York in 30 days or 2 weeks, or we did it overnight even. We got 90 days to comply. So we better know what we need to do there. For all the pre-existing stuff that all of us have, everyone, so we'll shift over to there. That's new, all right? So for all the pre-existing ones, we have a different deadline. For the new ones that were formed prior to January 1st, 2024, under current law, they need to be filed with CTA, the ones that are not exempt, by December 31st, 2024. We have a year. So we have a year to do that. So, and in some cases, it might be simple. In some cases, it may take 6 months to get all the information that we need. There is no excuse. Matter of fact, there's literally no excuse. Either we identify who the people are, the owners, or they can't be owners. They're gone. It's just that simple. Everyone must comply. And there are penalties, significant, as you know, for non-compliance. They're not messing around with this. In the bill that's passed the House, not the Senate, and Biden didn't sign yet, it extends that period from December 31st, 2024 to December 31st, 2025. So we actually get an extra year to comply if that law passes. We think there's so much pushback on the CTA that we believe that this, it's already passed the House. We believe the Senate and Biden will sign it, giving us a little bit more time to deal with how they're going to deal with 35 million pre-existing entities is kind of beyond me, and how we're going to be able to help everybody get that. Because now I have to come to you and say, okay, you've been my client for the last 15 years. We have 12 entities, and it looks like all of these 12 entities are filing entities. Now, you may have made changes over the time that I'm unaware of. You may have put it into trust that I'm unaware of. There may have been ownership changes that I'm unaware of. But now we have the daunting task of doing exactly the same thing. What we don't have to do, we don't have to say who filed it. We don't know. We don't care anymore. It could have been filed 12 years ago. And we don't have to say who was the supervising attorney at the time. That's not a requirement, you know, looking backwards. But we need to go through that same analysis, exempt, non-exempt. If it's not exempt, or who are the all we report the company, all of its beneficial owners, which is sometimes not easy to do. Now, you'll know with your members, for example, we'll have an entity that you own 25% of, that owns another entity that it owns 50% of, all of them become reporting beneficial owners. So we have to determine all that. And then it sits in a trust that becomes a, and then in the trust, for example, we do, for example, offshore asset protection trusts, and we do domestic asset protection trusts. And so in one of the trustees, we were just having a conversation the other day, one of our Nevada trustees, there are five trustees that are at this particular trust organization. Every one of the five, if the LLC sits in that trust, every one of the five trustees are reporting persons. Now, they'll each have their name and FinCEN identifier that, you know, it's John, Jack, you know, Bill and Jane. And identifier. So once we have the identifier set up and we know and we've scoped out who has to file, then we ship it over to, for example, we have a filing service that we have called Corporate Transparency Act Filings that will then file, go into the FinCEN network, file everything, get the numbers, get the approvals that are done. And that's ministerial. Kind of like when we hire an agent for service of process and setting up an entity, it's just a service that does it. It doesn't determine who has to file, doesn't determine whether it's exempt or non-exempt. That's all law, all right? But once we have that all, you give that over to the filers and let them, or you could do it, you could sit on the website and do it yourself, you know, spend 2 hours of your life in misery land, or you can have someone do it for $120 or something. So it's kind of not overly expensive to do that part.
Well, who's going to be the person that tells us? I mean, you're proactive about this with your clients.
Yes. But,
like, I think I had LegalZoom do my LLC when I did
it. And that's right. And that now it's a it has to be a filing entity. Yeah. So you're going to hear about it because it's all over the place. It's in the news. It'll be in the journal. It's the law. And you will have to either yourself report that. But I think self-reporting in this area, unless it's ultimately so simple, is a fool's errand because there are a lot of penalties associated with not doing it right. And it's really difficult for a layperson to understand, for example, if it's held in the trust, all the players in the trust protectors, trustees, people holding powers of appointment, you know, all of them need to comply. And it just, I think the government actually bit off a lot more than it can chew in doing this. Hopefully they'll grant us an extension of time. But as far as proactivity, we're doing this today for your people. That, you know, the word, and it's only the beginning of January. So the word's getting out. CTA is understanding. We're understanding who has to report. But the main thing is to understand why. If we understand why, it helps in the analysis. If we just say, you know, sometimes that Taylor Family Trust would be MT Trust. All right. So ABC LLC, a Wyoming LLC that's registered to do business in New York, all right, which has two members, is titled in MT Family Trust. That doesn't fly any. It flies for the rest of the public. But for the government, all of that information about our LLC or our corporation or our limited partnership needs to be reported to FinCEN. And since our trust is the beneficial owner, all the people in our trust that are players in the trust, so they know who's behind it. The whole key is that if I just put it in a trust and they didn't know who's behind the trust, it would wind up in the same scenario as before. Now,
Harry, quick question. So is there a case for like Vistage members, Mark's members and others, where their company may be exempt based on the revenue and all the other requirements, but this applies, of course, to rental income property, other things beyond your business. But even with the business, couldn't there be estate or asset protection planning strategies or tools in place that would require them to report even though their business is exempt, or am I off about that?
Well, no. If the business is exempt, it doesn't have to report. End of story.
But what about the SLAT you mentioned, that whole scenario?
Well, that's a trust. A trust, most trusts are not reporting entities. They don't get filed with the state, all right? They don't get a number. So a trust is not. However, if the trust owns a reporting entity, then the trust becomes a reporting entity. So what's going to happen? So if Mark sets up an irrevocable trust, all right, where he's the trustee, and inside that irrevocable trust, he has a piece of real estate in New York, not an LLC now, just a singular irrevocable trust. That is not a reporting entity. It's not an LLC. It's not a limited partnership. It's not a corporation. It's an irrevocable trust. So will there be opportunities to say, okay, let's not use an LLC, let's use an irrevocable trust? Probably no, because the LLC is a much better structure for that piece of real estate than that irrevocable trust will ever be. And okay, no big deal. We report it. We put who the owners are. Once we're done, it's just, you know, just becomes part of what you do in the future. But we'll have that. But there are some things that we all need to know, and then I'll start taking questions. So there needs to be, Mark, a communication strategy amongst all the business owners, all the reporting people. They all need to get FinCEN identifying numbers. All of the constituent documents, shareholders agreements, operating agreements, contracts, everything which has ownership of that company, there needs to be language that everybody agrees to that they will comply with CTA, because you could cause havoc if you don't. It's like saying you, me, and Paul have a company, and we're doing a buy-sell agreement, and Mark and Harry are fine, a third and a third, and Paul's giving us a hard time. Well, if you don't want to sign the buy-sell agreement, then you're not going to get your ownership interest in the company. It's just that simple. So you've got to comply by the rules. We also, it's very important for us on our end to deal with privacy and confidentiality. A lot of sensitive information, people's home addresses, driver's license, passports, are going to start being transmitted all over the internet. Yeah. There needs to be an encrypted methodology of moving those documents around, and encrypted methodology of moving to the government. The government swears, lovely, the government swears that it will never be disclosed and never be released other than to other government, to governmental agencies. And believe it or not, even a foreign governmental agency if they pass muster to get it done. So it's designed there so terrorists in London, you know, there's communication with the London with the English authorities and the American authorities on who's the owner. Now, by the way, in Europe, this is already in place. This is nothing new. We're one of the last holdouts that doesn't have it. And like you said, apply a loan, Mark, whatever we do, they're going to want everything, including our underwear size, anyhow, to get it done. Even notarization of a simple document, they want where do you live, fingerprint, they want, you know, driver's license, the things that are required. So it's not new. It's just they're building this registry of getting things done. And we also will have to obtain identifying numbers for entities that don't have them. And a lot of LLCs, single member LLCs, don't have them. You know, you have a single member LLC, you just use your social security number. Not good anymore. And so that's FinCEN. It's massive. And they also people have to be aware of changes. So let's say we have an owner, you own 25% of the company, I own 25% of the company, Paul owns 25% of the company, and Joe Blow owns 25% of the company. We're all reporting beneficial owners. The company's a reporting entity. We've all reported. And then owner number four moves to a different state or changes their driver's license or just moves to a different address. They bought a new place down the street. They have now 30 days. They have to bring their FinCEN identifier and their information up to speed with FinCEN, or our company is fined $500 a day, and we could be imprisoned up to 2 years. That person could be in prison. So, well, how do you enforce that? How they didn't tell you? You didn't know. And what they're basically saying, that's not an excuse. You have to know. You have to know what's going on, and you have to report. They're putting the burden on the American taxpayer and the American citizen. And it's targeted, Mark, right for small business, almost universally. All of your members might have the business, like my law firm is bigger than 20 employees and bigger than $5 million. It's not a reporting entity, but law firms are reporting entities. They're not exempt, believe it or not. But we all have other rental properties or LLCs that hold stocks, bonds, and cash and asset protection trusts and all the things we have that are LPs, LLPs, LLCs, all have to be reported.
Now, for New York, do we have to report it twice? Once to the city? Yeah.
Not the city, to the state.
The state.
The state. But in the New York state, we'll call it, it's the New York State LLC Transparency Act. Some of the reason they didn't pick on limited partnerships and pick on corporations. There's LLCs. That's just kind of odd, you know. So form a limited partnership. We don't have to comply with New York. But when you form a new entity in New York, LLC in New York, they want it as part of the organizational document. So when I create a new LLC for you in New York, you know, you have publication requirement in New York for the LLC. We would then at that time say, the owners are Mark Taylor, Paul Hitchcock. Here is their home address. Here's copies of their driver's licenses. And that goes to New York. So that's for new entities in New York. And then we kind of have the backwards look. We're also going to have a backwards look. So pretty much whatever we're filing for FinCEN would be the similar information in New York. So it'd just be duplicative to just send it one to another. Wouldn't be nothing extra, just for an LLC. If you've got an LLC and you're in New York, okay, fine. So we'll file a Feds, we'll file in New York.
All right, we have a couple of questions that have come
in. Hopefully I have answers.
Does the 90, we answered that one about the 90-day threshold apply to prior entities. This one says, I set up a revocable trust, but only gave the trust 1% of my LLC business. Does this trust become a reportable entity, or is the 25% ownership rule applicable?
Well, if only 1% of the company is held by the trust, which is kind of odd, but if only 1% of the company is held by the trust, then that trust would not be a reporting entity. It's not 25%. However, if that trust has the ability with that 1% ownership interest, so it's funny now. You see, let's just examine that. You could have a scenario in the company that looks like this. 99% is a non-voting interest. 1% is the voting interest, and the voting interest is held by the trust. So the trust doesn't qualify as a 25% owner, but it qualifies as the controlling entity. So you have to look and see, is that revocable trust the controlling entity of the underlying entity? Remember, it's not only ownership, it's ownership and or control. So you'd have to, so the analysis is that there's the 99 and one, the one's owned by the trust. You'd have to look at the trust, make sure everything is clear. But if everything is clear and it's not a controlling entity, that trust would not be a reporting beneficial owner. But the other 99 would be for the entity, unless it's a piece of real estate that's just sitting in a living revocable trust that would not be a reporting entity.
This one's an interesting question.
Sure.
Aside from the reporting requirements, how nefarious do you feel are the intentions of FinCEN? And under the ML statutes, they can do anything they want and folks will simply be subjecting their assets to risks, no?
Okay, so how nefarious is it? That's a really good question. For those of us that are in the business that I'm in, do we trust the government? No. Do we trust the government to protect the information properly? Although there's all kinds of protection. When you go to get a FinCEN identifier, there's like three forms of identification and two factors and a lot of stuff. That information is still in the hands of a third-party governmental agency. So my personal opinion is this is horrible, but it is what it is. So unless it's unconstitutional, we may think it's horrible, but we still have to comply.
Now, somebody wanted to know, please let us know what the next steps we should take to address this requirement near term, and if there's a mechanism exists to actually file these reports, including the assessment of LLCs.
Yes, yes. So the way that we're doing it is two parts. So one is the legal part. So the legal part is you tell me you have 10 companies. All right, so we kind of fill out a form on the 10 companies. And first we determine exempt, non-exempt. If they're exempt, we just take them off. And if the ones that are not exempt that we have to file, now we have to legally analyze who the beneficial owners are and who the controllers are. Sometimes that's simple, Mark. Sometimes that's complicated. So I figured that we're figuring in our firm that for an entity, maybe it's an hour of legal time. To do that analysis, but it could get more complex, could be 2 hours of legal time to do it. And then we determine that, yes, that's a filing entity. And yes, these are the four or five beneficial owners and controllers that have to file. And then we have a service, which is really interesting. We just hand that file to that service, and for $125, they will file all of those five people in FinCEN, get all the numbers that you need and get it back to you. So that guess you could do it yourself. You go online, do it yourself, but it's kind of easier to get a service to do it for you. And that's it. And then we're done. There's nothing else that need be done other than if there's an inaccuracy to correct it, unless there are changes.
Thanks.
But is it nefarious? Yeah. I mean, this was supposed to happen in 21, postpone, 22, postpone, 23, postpone, 24, they press the button and it's in, and there's legislation to make modifications to deadlines. Because I don't know, you know, it may sound simple, but it's not. It's for some entities that some of your members have, or I have, or others, or Paul has, it may take quite a bit of time to determine who the beneficial owners are. We may have to get now a swamped IRS to get a new identification number for your single member LLC that was filed with LegalZoom. How could I turn around if your LLC it sits there and we determine it's a filing entity? Someone needs to determine who the heck the owners are. Now, it might be simple. It may be just you. That's right. It. And you're the only manager. So that's a simple one. Shove it in your trust. Now your trust becomes the beneficial owner. And we got to make sure that who are the parties in the trust that can switch people around? They're all reporters. So it's just a bit of an analysis. So the next step is analysis to determine, and then actual filing. The actual filing is actually quite simple. The analysis could be simple, could be complex. Because sometimes you got companies that are owned by companies that are owned by companies. Now, oh boy, you run that up the rabbit hole, could take quite a while.
So somebody mentions that it's the National Small Business Association that's filed the lawsuit against the USG claiming that the CTA is unconstitutional.
Correct.
Entities that were formed prior to this year, would it be better to wait until later to see the outcome of the lawsuit?
Yes and no. So that's, you know, that's a good question. I've gotten that question 150 times already, and it's just the first few days of January. And here's my response, that it's very possible that this becomes declared unconstitutional, or portions of it be declared unconstitutional. But knowing what I know about the law, and I've only been at it for 50 years, the wheels of justice grind slowly. It's a case that's moving its way through. Ultimately, a district court will make a determination, and it'll be immediately appealed by the U.S. government if it goes the other way. Then the appellate court is going to make it. It's going to take a year for the appellate court to make a determination. And then you have to see if the Supreme Court, which they would, grants a writ of certiorari and goes to the Supremes to determine whether or not this is constitutional or not. My guess is it's constitutional, because it's no different than know your client, no different than a notary, and no different with the common standards in the Western economic societies of Europe, all right, and Canada and other countries. What is unconstitutional may be the time limits, the burden. Remember, it's adding a cost to every small business. I mean, someone's got to pay me to do all this stuff. And we're adding a burden, a cost of time. And one of the arguments for constitutionality is that the criminals are going to find a way around it anyway. And so all of the 35 million honest, hardworking small businesses in America that have engaged in appropriate entities for asset protection and estate planning purposes are being punished. All right. And yet it won't solve your problem. Terrorists are still going to find a way to launder money, and people are still going to find a way to avoid taxes. And the other thing too is that a lot of aspects of this are overly burdensome, and some of the directions under CTA are unclear. When you have unclear law that could result in onerous penalty, we're talking criminal penalties here. You know, jail time, that doesn't make good law. So some aspects of that may say, okay, well, 2 years in jail may be unconstitutional, but a $100,000 fine may not be. It's civil. All right. So those are the things. I'm thinking that portions of it might be unconstitutional. I'm also thinking a lot will depend on politics. There's an election coming up. The disturbing part to me is this was bipartisan. Mm-hmm. It was a bipartisan bill that had support of both Democrats and Republicans, because the goal is laudable. You know, we don't want, you know, American businesses to be used for nefarious activities. And so if this is a special compilation for the government, so we know who owns what business, you can't hide behind it. And so that's a really good question that I really don't have an answer to.
So we're getting close to the top of the hour here. Somebody wants to know if you could just repeat the list of required filers for existing companies.
Oh, so the list of required filers or the list of required companies versus the exempt companies? Because required filers, we don't know until you get in who, you know, once you have a company that's required to report, then the required filers depend upon the structure of the company. If I have three owners, third, a third, a third, they got to report. If those thirds hold it in their trusts have to report. The managers of the LLC or the president, the board of directors, senior officers that have control all have to report. So it's not just the president, the CFO, the COO, the CEO, all have to report. And all of them, if someone in the trust has overriding a voting trust that can throw out the president, it has to report. So you got to get in there and look at that. But remember, if it's a big company, and a big company is 20 employees based in the U.S., over 5 million gross sales, doesn't have to report altogether. So that's the list. It's everybody.
20 employees, $5 million, you're exempt.
Based in the United States.
Based in the United States. I think that's what you really want.
You're exempt, but now what happens when you have 18 employees where you have $4.8 million worth of sales and $25 million employees, and it happened during the course of a year, under current law, that change has to be reported as beneficial ownership within 30 days. And then it changes again. It goes above. It becomes exempt. These are the things that could make it unconstitutional because what we determined so far is that it has to be at the time of the reporting. Okay, this is what when I filed the report on July 10th for this company, that was there were over 20 employees, over 5 million based in the United States. And now the question is which we don't really have a good answer for. They fired two employees. Two employees quit. Now they're at 18 employees. Yeah. What happens?
Yeah.
You know? Sorry, what does it matter if they're independent contractors or W-2 or the employees?
Yeah, no, it has to be full-time employees.
Full-time.
W-2, yeah.
Yeah, W-2 full-time employees. You have to have 20 of them.
What if 10 are overseas?
It doesn't matter. They're W-2 employees. It doesn't matter if they're overseas. The company can't be overseas, though.
Wow. So are there any final words that you want to say as we wrap up, Paul?
My final words are, I think everybody now has a very good idea of what CTA is all about. The best question, not that all the questions were great questions, but the best question was, you know, some of the future of this is uncertain. What do we do now? Do we wait? I would suggest for easy, it's not a big deal. I would suggest we get it filed. If it's unconstitutional, okay, it's a waste of time. Look what we're giving them. They already have it. They have your passport. It's the driver's license, your home address, and your name. If you're a good law abiding, that's not a big deal. And so I would try to comply earlier than possible, because what's going to happen if we wait till the end, all right, we're in November, December, and now the fines started at $500 a day starting January 1st, 2025. If we don't get that extension, you're not going to get anyone to be able to help you to file.
Right.
And you will be in trouble the way it's currently set up, absent any legislative relief. So to me, I have a lot of entities. I already have my FinCEN number. Once you have your number, it's just Mark Taylor number, so-and-so, 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 you're done. So you use that option to get an identifier. So I think it's a good thing to get filed. And you know what else it does? And this is really important as we get to the top of the hour. Gives us all an opportunity to look at all our business entities, the ownership, the structure, the assignment to trust, to make sure that they're legally and good. It's kind of a good time to take a look at our structures and make sure that our structures are fine. So if nothing else, that is really worthwhile.
Right. Well, thank you so much, sir.
Okay, guys. Well, I'm going to leave you and Paul for a second. I'm going to jump off. Mark, an absolute pleasure. I look forward to speaking to anybody and everybody, answer their questions, and help them navigate the CTA. All right, guys. I'm taking off. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah. And Mark, thank you. Yeah. Great stuff, Mark. Thanks for participating in this. I want to thank everybody. We did record it. We'll get the recording out. If you give us a couple of days, Mark, I'll get it to you, for your use. But yeah, wonderful. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, we'll see you later.
New Year.